The first thing it starts off with, Vayedaber Hashem. Some of the things we talked about before, but I think we put it together in a way I think that's very useful. Let's hear. It says, Vayedaber Hashem Moshe Lemor, Daber El Aaron Vamarte, Lav Ba'aluscho Asaneros, El Mu Pnei Amenoro, Ya'iru Shivas Aneros. That's the first pasuk in the parsha. Rashi says, Ba'aluscho. Why does it say the terminology Ba'aluscho? Aliyah is rising up, right? That's what he's rising up. What's that to do with you? You. It's true. The flame rises, but it's not you're doing it. The flame rises. You light it, and then the flame rises. So really, should be had lakoscha when you light the menorah. Okay. So Rashi says valoscha shem shalav ole. You have to light it so the flame rises on its own. In other words, the pashtus is that it shouldn't be sputtering, etc., but light it well so that it rises on its own. But still, it's an interesting terminology. Sasemis says, commenting on Rashi's explanation over here, that the idea of you light it until it rises its own, he says as follows, says this Hasemis. Ki b'chol davar, yish nekuda chiyus me'Hashem Yisbarach. The same Hasemis, the same idea, over and over again, a million times he says it, in different ways, in different places. Right. That there's always a nekuda, a point of life in everything. Right? Right? This is what we're always looking for. Right? That nekuda of life in everything.
So what?
Time out. I know what you're going to ask. Yeah? Raksha kol toli b'avodas ha'odam. It's all dependent, though, on the avoda of the person. Right? In other words, the nakuda is there, but the only way you can draw it out, the only way you can draw it out is through your avoda. It's always there. There always is the point of Hashem's will that needs to be revealed, but hey, you gotta do your part. Lo orer hislavus lahatus hakol Hashem Yisborach. The person has to be mislahev. In other words, if you hear this, shakol toli b'avodas ha'odim le orer hislavus. You gotta get yourself excited about it. In other words, what's our problem? Our problem is, or ordinarily is we don't feel any excitement. And we say, ugh, either I'm a piece of garbage, right? A piece of garbage. Or Hashem doesn't care about me. Or combinations thereof. And that's not the issue. The issue is not going to come automatically. The idea is that you have to light your fire. You light your fire. And then that way you're able to touch that nakuda inside. And then that thing springs forth. It bursts forth in flame. And that in turn gives you more islamus. The degree of rotzon, of will and cheshek and desire you have to do this. So we put on tefillin in the morning, and we're waiting, we go, why don't I feel like I'm taking off from the stars? When I put on my tefillin.
And that's
good. Because you gotta get excited by putting on the tefillin.
Oh, before.
Right. Then, when you put on the tefillin, and that's by tefillin, it's true for anything, right? For anything, for any object, for any experience we come into contact with. When we're ma'ora, that hislavus. That's why, even though, a lot of people don't say, l'shem yichud kuchabrichu, the little tefillah before you put on your tefillin, mm-hmm. Right? A lot of people don't say it. But the fact is, or they're in a rush, or whatever it is, we're making a mistake. We really are. We're making a mistake. If we were to say it, then when we put on the tefillin, right, we would be attached to it more deeply. We attach to it more deeply, and that in turn would spill over onto us, because it's a cycle. It feeds one thing as the next. What we do, and that's the tefillin. We would go, what about everything else? Everything else that we come into contact with, our dealings with our spouses, everything. If we're mislaive, if we focus on what we need to bring out, and we do it with excitement, fine. So that's the lashon of haloscha saneros. Even though technically all you're doing is lighting it, why is it talking about raising it up? Because the idea is the way that you light it, that's the way you raise it up. In other words, even the flame is going to rise on its own. But if you put in your own flame, as it were, beforehand, it causes it to rise more greatly, more potently, yeah? And that in turn will have an effect on you. That's one point. A second point? Yeah, second point. Rashi says, this is Baloscha. So Rashi says another reason of why it used the terminology Baloscha. The first shot we said was because the way that you, from the Svasemis, the way you raise it up, the way the degree of whatever it is, of burning that's inside of you that you put into it has an effect on the mitzvah, drawing out the point of Hashem's will inside of it, etc. Rashi says a different parish also. The second parish Rashi says, you see in the bold and underneath the hatched line, the bold there. But oh Dorsha Rabbosenu, Mikan Shema Lahaisa Lifnea Menorah, Shalea Koin Omedu Metiv. There were steps before the menorah that a person would rise up on those steps, and then he would be Metiv the Neros. What's Metiv the Neros? Hatovas the Neros. Before you would light, in other words, let's say, what do you call it, you would clean out the cups. You would clean out the cups. So, before you put in the new wicks, the new oil, etc., so you have to clean out the cups. So it's a very strange thing. Rashi says that the reason why you use the terminology Bahaloscha, when you raise up, as it were, why use Lashon Haloscha as opposed to Padlakoscha? Right? We got the question straight. Is because there were steps that you rose up upon in order to do what to the menorah? Be native as aneros. Clean out the cups. I don't understand. We're talking about lighting it. Talking lighting it, you don't need to go up on the steps. The Kohen was pretty tall, he had a taper in his hand, right? Yeah? And he lit the lights. He didn't have to get up. What he called, he had to rise on the steps to light it. Technically, he was tall enough. The menorah wasn't that tall; it was beyond his reach. You needed to rise up on the steps in order to clean out the cups. You want to clean out the cups because you got to be above it. You have to be above it in order to clean out the cups properly. Take out the old wicks, pour in the oil. Right from below, then it wouldn't be so easy to do. But from above, you can do it. But why? But we're not talking about cleaning out the cups. We're talking about lighting the flames. We're not talking about cleaning out the cups. So why would we say at the time with the pasuk that's talking about lighting the menorah, say the reason the terminology Bahaloscha is used because they had to rise up on the steps in order to clean out the cups? We're not talking about cleaning out the cups. We're talking about lighting the menorah. Nachon? Mm-hmm. Says the Imri Emes. That's the son of the Svas Emes. The steps are necessary, physically necessary, in order to clean out the cups. Here's the menorah.
You can light the cups without standing on the steps. Why do you have to need the steps for?
Because you need to clean it out.
Wait, you can't clean it out without
the steps. Well, it's hard, what do you call it? If the menorah, let's say, is 8 tall. Right, and so you reach it, so what do you call it? So with lighting it, you got the wick in front, so you light it. When you're cleaning out, you got to have a better vantage point. You got to be higher above it, then you can properly clean it out. Nachon, right? So he says the reason of the terminology. The Rashi says the reason of Haloscha is used is because of these steps that were necessary for cleaning out the cups. But we're not talking about cleaning out the cups. We're talking about lighting the menorah, not talking about cleaning out the menorah.
And the mitzvah is to go up the steps in order to light.
In other words, it was necessary to have those steps, so therefore what you call the Kodesh Baruch Hu says you're going to have steps there. It's necessary, but it's necessary for cleaning it out, not for lighting it.
But, while you're lighting it already, you may as well go up and make sure you light it right.
That's true, but you can light it very easily without having to go up on the steps.
I understand.
So it's sort of a bizarre thing, you know, did you tell me? We're talking about lighting it. We've got a remez that you need the steps there in order to clean it out. We're not talking about cleaning it out. We're talking about lighting it.
I see.
It's not the topic. Says the Imre Emes. Chesiv ba'alos chesaneros v'isa ba'amal ha'isil z'nei ha'menorah shalea omeid ha'koi u'meitiv z'neros. That's when you clean out the cups. It's called being meitiv z'neros. It means when you make the neros, when you make the cups proper so they can serve their function and be successful, i.e. cleaning them out, putting in new oil, new wicks, that's called to be Metiv Daneros. to be mated to mate to the Neros, to make them good, to make them usable, to make them functional, to make them capable of fulfilling their job description. That's the Tavas and Neros. He says, Ha ze koi aladloka, ki isma targum adlakuscha. He says, we're talking here about loka, we're not talking about the cleaning. Ulam shahaisa zos ha chonel osid, leis hester achi izbata. He says a very fascinating thing. He says, when you light the menorah, you got the great light. The light, right? The light of Hashem, the light of the Shekhinah, etc. When you're cleaning out the cups, there is no light. Right? There is no light. In the Pasuk says, Ksiv v'yom tova, heye betov, u'v'yom ro re'e. Yeah? He says, on a good day, be upbeat. U'v'yom ro, in a difficult day, re'e, see. Tevas re'e, says Imri Eres, koi ala yom tov. Shitzarcha adam liros l'hachin mimeha atova al yom hara. What does that mean? That means that when days are good, you know how it is sometimes when you're all plugged in and you're flying high and everything's clear and everything's wonderful and the birds are chirping and you're singing and your avodas Hashem is like, of course it's pasha, that's gevaldik, it's wonderful. They're good days. And then the other days, the other days when you're like walking out of the house on the way to shul, you look in the mirror and you say, "You, I know what you are. I'd like to say a few words about you, but I don't want to say it because it's public." Right? Yeah, right. I don't want to say it's public, and really, you shouldn't be use words like that, etc. Right? The days, the dog days, really bad days, where you don't feel plugged in at all, where you're not sure about anything, where you're disgusted with yourself, and you feel a sense of hopelessness. Right? Of course, it's all theoretical because none of us ever experienced this. Right? Right? Etc. Yeah. See, he says, the Pasuk says, right? The Yom Tov, Heye Betov, on a good day, be upbeat. The Yom Ra, Re'e, and on a difficult day, Re'e, see, says the Imre Emes, what's your shot, Re'e? Make sure you look forward on those good days to prepare for the bad days. Why do I only have things here that I don't want to break? It's his throat. What do you call it?
Cleaning the menorah is a bad day and lighting it is a good day?
Yeah. No, you do both on the same day.
Let's relax. Let me just finish. Ubavur, yeah? A person has to be making, he has to prepare on the good days for the bad days. The idea being, we ask the question, why talk about the steps which are necessary for cleaning out the cups when we're talking about lighting the menorah where you didn't technically or physically need the steps? The answer is, you go up on the steps even when you're lighting it, right? Because symbolically that saying is, prepare in the days, yeah? Strengthen yourself in the days. Don't take for granted the good days, when you feel connected. Plug into it with your Shemaim, knowing that you gotta save up for the days when things are not clear. And then connect yourself deeply, excuse me. When things are going good, there's two ways to do it. You can either say, wow, it's so clear, it's so push it, it's easy, wow, I could just sing all day, I love this, I love that, etc., etc., etc. And not invest really in strengthening his Yerushalayim then. That's not his first focus. Yerushalayim, I feel great, it's me and Hashem, we're like buds. Chalila. Yeah? Right? We're like buds. He says, strengthen your Shemayim then. Why? Because the days when the menorah goes out, the times when the menorah is out, when the light's out, right? And when the lights are on, strengthen your Shemayim, your connection. Don't just sail along to be caught and enjoy the epiphany, right, of the moment, yeah? Don't just as it were, flow sweetly, whatever it is. The Afton. Yeah, right? Don't just flow down the stream. flow gently, sweet after. Right? Don't just flow down the stream. Strengthen yourself, also your Shemayim. Enjoy the good moments, but the good moments of Kirvas Hashem, but also strengthen your Shemayim, because when the lights go out, you ain't gonna feel so good. But you need, if you have your Shemayim, then you won't mess yourself over. If you don't have your Shemayim when the lights go out, then you toss everything out. That's why, even though the steps were only physically necessary for cleaning out the menorah, even while you're lighting it, there's a remez to the steps. Because it says Bahaloscha as opposed to Adlakoscha, to tell you there's steps. To tell you there's steps. That was the second parish in Rashi. The idea about Rashi said there was a mala, there's steps going up to light it, but it wasn't necessary physically to rise on the steps to light it. So why are we talking about the steps when we're lighting it? We're not talking about cleaning it out. It was only steps were physically necessary when you're cleaning it out. And that he's telling you that even when you are lighting it, you should have in mind to strengthen yourself for the time when you need those steps, right? When you need really cool, because when you're cleaning it out, there are no lights then, right? Strengthen yourself in your Shemayim at the time of clarity, so that you'll have reserves to maintain your connection when the times are dark. Okay. Further. Next, really cool. Underneath the next hatch line. Valoscha. Lamanisvacha Parshas, the menorah, the Parshas, and the Nesiim. Why is the Parsha of the menorah juxtaposed to the Parsha of the Nesiim? Like, we know the end of last week's Parsha, the story of the Nesiim. Right? The Nesiim. Each one bringing, they brought their six covered wagons. They brought their six covered wagons together. Each grouping of two Nesiim brought one covered wagon in order to donate that to the, what do you call it, to the Mishkan, to use to carry the heavy objects of the Mishkan. Right? Right? Yeah. And also they brought their special, you know, their korbanos. They gave their, what do you call it, their basins, and their plates of gold, and their, you know, etc. And all the different korbanos they brought to inaugurate the Mishkan. So Rashi says, Lama Nisvacha, Parshas HaMenorah, the Parshas HaNesiim. Why is the Parsha of Menorah juxtaposed to Parsha HaNesiim? Because really this is a separate thing. This is a mitzvah every day. This is not part of the inaugural process. It's not part of the inaugural process, lighting a menorah. The inaugural process was finished in Nassau, last week's Parsha. He says, Lama Nisvacha, Lefisha, Kishra, Aaron, HaChanukas HaNesiim, Chol Shaz Daito. When Aaron saw the inaugural contributions of the Nesiim Chol Shaz Daito, his identity was shaken. Why? Shalahayi imayim b'chanuka lohu v'lo shifto. Because neither he nor his tribe were involved. The Kohanim, Levim, they weren't involved in this inaugural process.
You know, in a sense, they were involved. They received things.
They what?
They received the wagons and the bulls to pull them.
That's true, but they didn't contribute.
I understand.
Okay, they didn't contribute.
They weren't involved at all.
Okay, they didn't contribute. Okay. Recall, you're just trying to be like Avram. So Hashem says to him, don't worry, by your life, your chelik is greater than their chelik, because you light and you clean out the cups.
Hashem said that too?
Right, to Aaron HaKohen. Okay. How so? How is his chelik better? And the Ramban talked about this, we're going to... He says it's really a reference to Ner Chanukah, right? That the Kohanim, because the Hashmonaim are Kohanim, that way their chelik is greater, because in the future they're going to be the ones who are going to bring Torah back to Klal Yisrael, etc. But let's go with Rashi first. He says, it says afterwards in Pasuk Beis, Daber el Aaron v'amat elav v'aloskot haneros el mul pnei hamenorah yairu shivas haneros. Mul pnei hamenorah. The seven, as it were, lights of the menorah will shine opposite the face of the menorah. What's that referring to?
The lights in the north will shine opposite
the face, right? The face, right? The central shaft. The central shaft. In other words, all the lights will be focused towards the central shaft. Right? We'll call that the B'nai HaMenorah. So Rashi says, yeah, on Ya'iru Shiva Saneros, why is that? Oh, where's Elmul P'nei HaMenorah? It says Rashi, Elmul Nera Emtsoi, towards the middle Nera, which is on the central shaft. She'enu B'kanim L'beguf Shel Menorah. It all should be pointed there. The first one is there, the middle one is there itself, and the other three on each side, so six altogether, with that middle one itself, is seven, they're all pointed towards the middle. Ya'iru Shiva Saneros, they should shine their light, the seven lights. Shisha Shal Sheshes HaKanim, Shloshim Mizrachim Ponim L'mul HaEmtzai, P'sil Shem Hem, V'chei Shloshim Aravim, Rashi P'sil L'mul HaEmtzai, V'lam B'kidei Shlo Yomu L'Ora Hu Tzorech. So the reason why they're all pointed towards the middle is to show that we call, does Hashem need the light? It's not for Hashem that he needs the light. He doesn't need the light. Because if in general, if you want something to give out more light, you don't want to focus towards the middle. You want it branching out, so he just gives out more light. Right? Says this Fasemis. Yeah. Right? So the idea being, Rabbi, he says, Heyid HaKosuf, Kichal HaKadush Al HaMishkan Bekoach Hiskarvus HaNesiyim. Right? This is the Fasemis from Hanukkah. He says that first we have the Chanukah HaNesiyim, right, with the end of last week's Parsha. Beginning of this Parsha talks about the Menorah. It's teaching us that the Shechina rested upon the actions of the Nesiim. Right? The Shechina, in other words, the Kedusha, I should say, of the Mishkan came about as a result of the Nesiim. If we remember correctly back to last week's Parsha, so what was involved in the Nesiim's contribution that brought the Kedusha, not just the things that they physically brought, but the way they brought it. First of all, remember we learned that they brought six wagons. Each one of the two Nesiim brought, two Nesiim, groupings of two Nesiim apiece, brought six wagons. That's 12 altogether. Everybody called 12 Nesiim brought six wagons. So first of all, that shows unity. The fact that they all intended, we learned also, Rabbi Bachi says they all intended to give exactly the same thing one as another. Once again, unity. Right? Not that I want to outdo or outshow what he called my friend. Even though each one had their own unique kavana when they brought it. But nonetheless, on the outside, they wanted all the trappings to look the same. That there shouldn't be any, God forbid, any jealousy. Not only that, but the Nesiim, we know, Rashi told us last week, that the Nesiim, the word Nesiim is written without a Yud. It's written Nun, Sin, Yud, Aleph, and there should be another Yud Mem. It's written Chaser. Why? Because they realized that when they donated for the building of the Mishkan, they weren't Zrizim. They had their thumbs stapled to the suspenders, and they said, you know, let everybody bring what they bring, and in the end we'll finish, we'll bring everything else that's needed. And they had nothing they were to bring. There's nothing to bring except for the avonim, for the choshen, and for the ephod. That was the only thing that was left for them to bring. And Hashem, because they realized that they'd sinned, they did tshuva, and Hashem sent them, right? He dropped Nesiim, what we call, he dropped it through clouds. The word Nesiim there is a reference to clouds. The Medrash also says clouds dropped the precious stones at the doorsteps because they did tshuva. But anyway, now when it's coming to inaugurate the Mishkan, they say we're going first. We're going to show everybody that you have to be quick about these things, not laid back. Yeah, what do you call it? Sit on your haunches. Yeah, but puff away. What do you call it? You're sitting in your hammock there with your mint julep in one hand. Yeah, and say, okay, we'll see whatever everybody else brings, and in the end, we'll bring it. Right? We're not doing that. They went and brought first. They brought the inaugural things for the Chanukah and the Mishkan. They brought first. So that was what do you call it? That was their contribution upon their actions, as it were. Their actions did the Kedusha come to the Mishkan. So then came along Aaron, and he said, well, wait a second, what about me? I didn't do any of that. That wasn't my, you know, I'm missing in that. So Kodesh Baruch Hu tells him, when you light the Neros, when you light the neros, yeah, your chelek, lighting the neros, shows something even greater than what they did. How so? So I think the pshat is like this. Rashi says that when you what do you call it, you light the menorah, light the menorah, so it all point towards the central shaft to show that Hashem doesn't need light. Central shaft also, let's say according to this pshat anyway, is the Ner HaMaravi, the western, right, call it the western Ner, they call it. Again, it really depends how the menorah is set up, but what do you call it, the way that he's learning it, yeah? Because right, the menorah, according to this parish, was set up north-south in the, what do you call it, in the Mishkan, and the central one is the Ner HaMaravi, like you look pointing towards the west side, which is where the Aron was. And that Ner HaMaravi, when the Jews were functioning properly at any event, certainly when it was in the Mishkan, it was like that, never went out. It lasted longer. It never.
Didn't have to clean it.
They took it and put a new thing in, but it never went out on its own. Mm-hmm. To show the Shekhinah was Shori and Klaiso, the Shekhinah rested in the Jewish people, right? Says Matemis. But what's so big about that? They saw the Shekhinah was resting in the Jewish people anyway. The clouds of glory were around them all the time. The pillar of fire. When they saw God's. Yeah, but the Kiddush over here is in the actions of man. You light, and the Shekhinah rests. Right? In the action of a man. Unilaterally. A Kiddush Brooklyn says, bang, my Anon is going to be a poof. My cloud of glory is going to be a, or bang, the pillar of fire is going to be a bang. Kiddush Brooklyn brings it. Here, when you light it, through your actions, through your recall, your doing, you've lit the Ner HaMaravi, and that's going to stay lit always. So the Shekhinah rests in the actions of the Jewish people, not in the midst of the Jewish people, and just it happens to be there.
But that's what we call
Aaron. Right, that's what he's saying, Aaron. That's one aspect. Okay, one aspect. There's another aspect. The Sforno says, the idea of the six, what do you call it, all of the branches, Elmu Pnei HaMenorah, that they all pointed towards the central shaft. So Sforno says that, what is that referring to? That's referring to that there are two sides to the menorah. The menorah represents the Jewish people. There are those who are dedicated to only learning, and those who are dedicated to, what do you call it, to making a parnasa and learning. Three to the right, three to the left. They're all focused towards the middle. They're all focused towards the Torah Kedosha. They're all focused towards the Shekhinah in the middle. They're all focused L'Shem Shamayim. He says that's the godless of the menorah, to show that the Shekhinah rests in the Jewish people when everybody, all different walks of life, the all mechavim L'Shem Shamayim, are all focused towards one common goal. Okay? So we have on the one hand the lesson, right, that Rashi teaches us in the Elmu Pnei HaMenorah, that all the lights of the menorah should focus towards the middle, right, towards the Ner HaMaravi, which teach us, yeah, that Hashem's presence, Ner HaMaravi never went out, Hashem's presence, right, Hashem's presence, yeah, rests upon the actions, in the actions of the Jewish people. That's one lesson. There's another lesson of the Sforno, that shows that when does Hashem's divine presence exist? When all the different parts of Christ are all focused towards what we call Shem Shemayim, to work together. So I dare say that what he called, so that is what he called, that is, if we put together the things that we've learned about the menorah so far, we understand how Hashem was being Menachem Aaron, and saying your chelik is the greatest. Why? We said before that it taught us the derech of Avoda. When you light the menorah, right? When you light the menorah, it taught us on the one hand that it said b'haloska. You have to hold your action there. You have to put in your cheshek. When you put in your cheshek to do the mitzvah, that in turn causes the fire to rise up more brightly. That was one lesson we learned from the menorah. Another lesson we learned from the menorah is that when you get to, what do you call it, that it teaches us the lesson of going up on the steps, even you don't need to go up on the steps. In other words, rise up on the stairs, as it were, of your Shemayim. even when you're lighting it, even though you technically you don't need to walk up those steps then. Why? Because you have to prepare for the dark days. That's another lesson in Avodas Hashem. A third lesson in Avodas Hashem is that what? Is that when you light the menorah, you should know that Hashem's presence, right, is dwelling in your action. He's dwelling in your action. And that's the reason why it says, recall the Ner Maravi, or Bechlau, to show that we want the Ner Maravi. Hashem doesn't need the light. He wants to show you that you bring the light, and His presence rests within the action that you do. The Ner Maravi didn't go out to show once again that a Jew, by his action, brings the divine presence. It exists in a miraculous fashion. From the Sforna we learned, right? From the Sforna we learned that we recall that everything has to be done to the best of our ability of unity, all the Jewish people. These are the lessons, and that's why the lighting of the menorah, as it were, is the greatest act, because it teaches us all about different aspects of the avoda. Different aspects of the avoda. I reiterate, Rikwat, first of all, for the fact that the degree of hislavus, of excitement that you show, that causes the, what do you call, that causes it to rise up more brightly, because that's how you reveal the divine, that's how you reveal Hashem's will in the act that you're doing. Next, the other lesson that we learned from the Imre Emes, that you have to prepare during the days when things are clear, so that you'll have reserves to protect you, right, when days are not so clear. Remember the dark days, the light days, going up the stairs, even though it wasn't necessary to light it, because you're going to have to rise on those stairs when the lights go out in order to clean out the cups that have gone out. There is the lesson, as it were, of showing, right, the Shechina Shora in the actions, like the Sfas Emes taught us, in the actions of the Jewish people. When we light the menorah, that brings the Shechina. Not just the Shechina is in our midst, but the Shechina is in our midst through our actions. We learn the lesson of the, what do you call it, of the Sforno, which is what, that when we're doing all of this, we have to be mechavein, yet to be connected. All of Klal Yisrael should be connected, right? A recognition of appreciation from the three lights of the Noah, with the three left-hand lights of the Noah, those who are learning Torah exclusively and those who are learning, working and learning together, all focused towards the central shaft. This encompasses the entire framework of Avoda. I dare say, also, the last mission in Shas, we talked about it before, the last mission, Uksin, tells us, the beginning of the mission tells us, Rav Shuvan Levi tells us, that Atzer Kosh Baruch Hu, the future will give L'chol Tzadik V'Tzadik Shai Olamos, 310 Olamos, Shneim L'Han Chila O'av HaYesh Motosem HaMalei. I will give over to Yesh, being, right? Every Tzadik will get Yesh. What is that Yesh? That Yesh is, in other words, when you travel through life trying to do, under whatever circumstances you find yourself in, with whatever object you come into contact with, and whatever experience is washing over you, and whatever feelings are pulsing inside of you at the moment, good ones or not such good ones, etc. You try to be over Hashem, that's how you build your Olam Haba. What you do in your lifetime, that becomes your Yesh. That's the first part of the Mishnah. Right? And that really speaks to all the entire context of the Shechina resting in our actions, etc. Always finding the right nakuda, etc. Right, doing with hislavus, all those things that we heard. The last part of the Mishnah is Rav Shimon Chalapta says, "Lomata Kosh Baruch Hu Kli Machzik Brach LiYisrael Ella Shalom." Right, that's a Kli Machzik Brach. What is the vessel that will hold all of this connection? Shalom. When we're all connected to one another properly, then all of our connection to the Shechina has a receptacle within which to live, within which to thrive. And that's the lesson of the Sforno. That's the lesson of the Sforno. The Sforno is that through Achdus, right? That's where the Shechina rests. So when HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Aaron, Gdora Shel Chomi Shelahem, he's not got more RBIs. The idea is that the lesson of the Menorah teaches both the Derech of Avoda and how to maintain the godless of one's service Yeah, and maintain it in the kli that's necessary to be able to hold it. One more point, and then we'll whatever. It says we know that what he called, they had some my difficult moments in the parsha. Right? We know the two psukim, Vayhi ben tzo Aaron and Uvnucho Yomar. Right? Those psukim. That's Perek Yud, psukim Lamed Hey and Lamed Vav. Lamed Hey and Lamed Vav. Vayhi ben tzo Aaron Vayom Moshe Kum Hashem Vayputzo Evecha Vayenusu Mishanecha Mifanecha and Uvnucho Yomar Shuv Hashem Rivos Hafei Yisrael. This speaks, as it were, to the triumph of the Jewish people. Vayibin Tzoron, when the Aaron travels before them, Moshe says, Kum Hashem, rise up Hashem, Yafutsu Yevecha, scatter your enemies. Vayanusi Yevecha, those who were called with hatred for Hashem and for the Jewish people, and they'll flee from before you. And then afterwards, Uvenuchel Yomar, Shuv Hashem, and when we come to rest, we say, we call it in place, the time of tranquility, Shuv Hashem Rivos Alfei Yisrael. And Hashem will cause your divine presence to rest, yeah, in the midst of the Jewish people, in the multitudes of the Jewish people. Perek Yud. I said Perek Vav, I'm sorry. Perek Yud. Pasuk Lamed Hey and Pasuk Lamed Vav. So those are the moments of triumph for the Jewish people. And those psukim, as it were, are misplaced. They have these nunim, afuchim. They have these backwards or upside down or backwards and upside down, right? This is a discussion. Yeah? Nunim, bracketing those two psukim. Right? You see that?
Yeah.
Right? Bracketing. So the reason they're bracketed is because there's a discussion, it's machlokes Rebbe Mershim Gamliel. Why are they bracketed? Are they bracketed because they don't really belong over here? They belong in Parshas Bamidbar, when we're talking about the traveling of the encampment? Or is the reason they're bracketed is because we're coming to stop, we don't want to have three, as it were, calamities in the Jewish people, one after the other. What those three calamities are is a discussion in its own right. Right? One calamity could be, again, let's say Quarantosis, they left Maimon Har Sinai. They left the Mount of Sinai too eagerly. Another one was the Misonanim. Misonanim. Right? The Misonanim are those who were complainers. The question is, why were they complaining? And the next one was Kibros HaTava, the ones, the Misavim, the ones they desired to have a desire. Right? They wanted whatever they wanted. A desire. So we want to break that. We put that over there in order to break up the three parayas. I'm going Quarantosis because there's different ways to understand it. Okay. So it says the first one you don't really see it in the Chumash, but it says they left Mount Sinai. They left the Har Sinai. They left it. They left it with too much eagerness. Like, okay, we're out of here. We did it. We're out of here. And the next was the Misonanim, and the next is Kibros HaTava. So right back in the middle, in order to break up the triplet, so it should be a chazaka, it's called like that. Yeah, they have these two psukim. So the idea being, right, these two psukim are really idyllic. Hashem is traveling, the Or Hashem travels before the Jewish people, our enemies are scattered. We come to rest, and now, what do you call it? Hashem, the divine presence, rests upon us. So that is our essence. That's really who we are. Psukim are put over here so that what? To do what? To make sure that we don't have a false sense of what our identity is. Right? You have three Averas, one after the other. You left Har Sinai too quickly. Right? Then you misowning him. And then afterwards, what do you call it? Then afterwards, you're what do you call it? Your Kivas Atava. So what is the idea over here? The idea over here is as follows. Why did they leave Har Sinai too quickly? Right? Because it's not because they didn't want to keep Torah mitzvahs anymore. It's because we've done so much, we must have done it all. In other words, a person's attitude towards Torah, sometimes is, you know, I did it. I can't possibly do more than this. I'm done. A person should never want to stop Torah because there's no end to Torah. The godless of Torah is to always be involved in the process. You're never there. There is no there. It's endless. It's endless. So it's not like they left Tarsin because now we can go on vacation, we don't have to wear a kippah, we don't have to eat kosher, right? We can go mixed swimming, right? That wasn't their thought. The thought was, like, we've done so much, we've risen so much, we must be there. You're never there. The next was the misonanim. The misonanim, they were complaining. Says the Shemi Shmuel. He brings from the Panim Yafos. He says, why were they misonim? He says, this day when they were traveling was the 50th day from when the Mishkan was erected. It was the 50th
day.
When they were traveling now, he says it was the 50th day from when the erection of the Mishkan.
What
did they do? Right? So now, what were they complaining about? So he mentions, among other things.
Oh, the 50th day, it's a high level.
Right? And they couldn't grasp it, right? They couldn't grasp it. Like, it became distant for them. It wasn't clear to them. And because of that, they thought, ugh, we have nothing. This is going back to the bad days, right? You know, I don't understand. I can't wrap my head around it. I don't feel it anymore. Baal Shem Tov says, you know what it's like? He says, the Baal Shem Tov says it's like when a father wants to teach his child how to walk. So he can't stand it with him all the time. He stands there. As the kid walk, he backs off, right? So for someone on the outside doesn't understand what's going on over here, he says, the father's being cruel. Or what father does, then wants the kid to come close to him. He wants to teach the kid how to walk. That's the derech. Hashem sometimes makes it more difficult. After you've achieved something, in order that you shouldn't just be the beneficiary of a gift, but you should learn how to do it yourself, to build yourself, to give birth to yourself. So here, what's happening over here is they left Har Sinai too quickly. We did it already. We did it, right? We accomplished it. Again, they weren't planning on running away, yeah, and throwing the kippahs away, right? We did it. That's a mistake. You never did it. You never finished. When you have that attitude, then the result is that when things are not clear, he says, darn it, I never had anything. Or maybe I had it and I lost it. Or maybe I never had anything to begin with. You become misonin, and the more of a shamish says, the lush misonin is the lush of a velus. You're mourning your loss of self. And then you begin to kvetch. Right? Because misonin also means to complain. First, you mourn your loss of self. Again, look at the unbelievable way that things develop. First, we're there. We did it already, right? No, you're never there. But once you make that mistake, and Hashem, meanwhile, is trying to train you to build yourself, he steps away. It's not as clear as it was before, because you got to know it's endless. Keep on following me. Keep on following me. Come, you walk towards me. Walk towards me. There is no end. I love you, but I want you to build yourself. I want you to give birth to yourself. You don't understand that, though. Then we don't understand, and things don't make sense to you, and you don't feel like you're flying high anymore. So the result is, you feel, ugh, I lost it. Or, ugh, I never had it. You're misowning. Right? Once you're misowning, so then what happens is, I don't feel alive anymore. How am I going to feel alive? I'm going to medicate myself with taiva. I'll feel alive through desire, fulfilling desire. It could be food, it could be other stimuli, whatever it is. Right? Because I don't feel that sense of life anymore in my ruchnius. So the Torah, as it were, put these two psukim over here to break up that pattern. To know that we always have the ability to break up that pattern. We always have the ability to break up that pattern. And you think to yourself, if the psukim don't belong here, so what does it help that the Torah put it down over here? Lamaisa, they had three things in a row, right? Right? The terrace is that you could, the Torah is always with you. You can always stop the pattern. We are what the Torah is. We can always grab the Torah, right? The Torah which these two people speak about, the highest levels of Jewish connection to the Rebbeinu Shalom. Even Sarod, Hashem will cast away our enemies. When we come to rest, what do you call it? His divine presence will be in our midst, etc. The degree that you connect to the Aron HaKodesh, the degree to which you connect to the Torah, you can stop this pattern. And that's why, what do you call it? That's why it's put over here, to block that. So the first part of the Parsha, right, we learned about Darkei Avoda, the Menorah, etc.
Yeah,
right? Second part of this part of the Parsha here, we're talking about when things are not so clear. Right? Yeah. Don't allow yourself to fall into the pattern.
So
grab onto the Torah.
So you're applying the menorah to steps to this Parsha to the end when they started to complain.
Again, but he quotes.
That's good. So
yeah.
Right.
If you know that it never ends, and you're always preparing because you know these days may come, right? Like you said, like the Baal Shem Tov says, Hashem is going to step away because he wants you to learn how to walk on yourself. So if you do it, you're in good shape. And if you mess up, you can always grab onto the Torah, grab onto the Heben Sora and the Venu Chayoma, grab onto that. You'll stop the pattern from evolving into disaster. Okay. Beis Hashem, we should, we learn together, should, wend its way down from our heads into our hearts, and we'll be better off for the process.